hey, Joe Casaboni here, and I'm just letting you know that How I Built It is now Streamlined Solopreneur. So if you're seeing new artwork and a new name in your podcast player, that is expected and by design. The new name better reflects the mission and really what has been the mission of this show for the last few years, and I'm really excited about it. All the links in the show notes and howibuilt.it will still work, but the show also has a new home over at streamlined.fm if you want to check it out. Thanks so much for listening.
I was one of the fastest promoted folks at BlackRock, the company that I worked at. So I was a managing director at 31 years old. I was one of the youngest ever. That's kind of a made man in the company. There's probably 500 in a company of 100,000. Right, it's kind of like becoming a junior partner would be an equivalent. But you're a made man, and it's a very known thing. So I hustled. You could make the argument that I hustled for, you know, so 21, I entered the workforce. I hustled for 10 years to get that, right? And you could make the argument that a lot of the reason why I don't need to worry about building wealth at this phase of my life is because of the hustling that I did from age 21 to 31. I'm not against hustle. I think there's a time and place for hustle. Usually it's when you have more energy and less commitments.
I abhor hustle culture. Telling someone to work a full-time job, then go home and work more, all for some goal that keeps changing, is, in my opinion, how to lead an empty life. I'm worried that even in 2024, we continue to fetishize making money and hustling. So I decided to talk to Kay He. Kay, if you don't know, worked hard. He still works hard. But as he put it, he hustled for 10 years of his life. He worked on Wall Street, becoming the equivalent of a junior partner in a law firm and earning a seven-figure salary at BlackRock, one of the biggest investment management firms. But he left that job. He left the seven-figure salary, and he's built a life that he enjoys. So you'd think he'd be the poster child for the anti-hustle culture, right? But he makes it very clear. Sometimes you do need to hustle. The fact that he did hustle, while it did have long-term effects, set him up for success now. He says that life is full of seasons, and recognizing that seasonality is important. We cover a ton of topics in our short time together, but I think the biggest takeaway is that if you hustle without a goal in mind, then you're just going to hustle for the rest of your life. So look for these top takeaways. There are seasons to life. It's important to recognize that and adjust for the season you're in. If you're working to eventually gain more time, ask yourself if you can cut some costs and gain that time now. Sure, somebody could pay you for $10,000 for 5 hours of work doing data entry. But do you want to do data entry, or would you rather have those 5 hours free? And there's a difference between revenue and profit. Most people share the top line revenue, but what are they really taking home? Comparing yourself to other people in this way is not good for your mental or physical health. That's why Kay says multiple times throughout the episode, he's not judging. These are decisions he makes for himself. And it's important for you to think about your goals and the season of life you're in and make the decisions that you need to make for yourself. In the pro show, we get a lightning round where Kay tells us effective use of stories. He loves telling stories as much as I do. There'll be another bonus episode where I kind of expand upon this. So if you want to hear that bonus episode plus this episode ad-free and an extended version of it, you can become a member over at howibuiltit.com/join. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe right in Apple Podcasts. And you can find all of the show notes over at howibuiltit.com/410. But for now, let's get into the intro and then the interview. Hey, everybody, and welcome to How I Built It, the podcast that helps busy solopreneurs and creators grow their business without spending too much time on it. I'm your host, Joe Casabona, and each week I bring you interviews and case studies on how to build a better business through smarter processes, time management, and effective content creation. It's like getting free coaching calls from successful solopreneurs. By the end of each episode, you'll have 1 to 3 takeaways you can implement today to stop spending time in your business and more time on your business or with your friends, your family, reading, or however you choose to spend your free time. All right, I'm here with Kehi, and I'm so excited to talk about our topic because hustle culture, honestly, is like something I super hate. So, Kay, first of all, thanks for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Thanks so much. I've really been enjoying your podcast, which I will link to in the show notes, of course. But the first thing I want to dive into is actually, as we record this, your most recent episode, which is your interview with Amanda Goetz. You talked a lot about boundaries and being ambitious while also being a parent. I personally think that a lot of like the business advice that we hear from a lot of people is like for single people or for not single, for like non-parents only, right? Like even Marie Kondo like stopped doing her like Katamari method thing after she had kids. So I think it's easy to hustle when you don't have a lot of other obligations. And I would just love to hear like your point of view on that as someone who's come from Wall Street, and now you're running a successful business, and you seem to still have a lot on your plate.
Yes. So first, thanks so much for having me. Thanks to all the listeners tuning in, and y'all are awesome. So it's probably in my origin story, but to repeat it, I hustled very, very hard for a large season of my life. So I will not, I really do believe that there are seasons of life for everything, right? Just like there's a season for planting seeds, and there's a season for collecting seeds, and there's a season for eating the fruits that your seeds, you know, yielded, right? And I do believe that life is like that as well. Now, obviously, for some people, those seasons tend to coincide with, you know, having kids, not having kids, being young and energetic, having to caretake elder parents or not caretake elder parents. So I just believe that as a starting point, there's a season for everything. And I pass no judgment on what season you're in. I'll just share the way I approach the seasons. My season of hustle was age coming out of the womb. So age 0 to age 35. So 35 years of hustle in many different facets. I was a very, very kind of driven kid, very entrepreneurial. Like I taught myself HTML when I was 15. So this was in like 1993.
Okay.
28-8 modems back then.
Yeah.
And I would go to the local businesses and say, I think you need a website. And then I would charge $20 an hour in $1995, which is, I don't know, probably $40 an hour today, cash, to make websites. So that was a hustle. I think that, and then I went to college. I went to a school that has, you know, high academic standards. I went to Yale for undergrad. And then I worked on Wall Street. And in all those instances, I dove in headfirst, right? I really worked my butt off. I kind of prioritized work above everything else. I was extreme about a lot of things, and I'm happy to share the things that I was extreme about. Like, for example, one day I have chicken legs, and I don't like that. Like really skinny calves. You know, I'm Asian American. If you can't see the video, and I just didn't like that I had really skinny legs. And so one day I decided I'm not going to have skinny legs anymore. And so I did 1,000 elevated calf raises every day for 6 months.
Wow,
it didn't work. You can't change your genetic programming. Chicken legs are genetic, not earned. But that was the kind of ethos that I would bring, I literally had a piece of plywood, or not, I don't know if it's plywood, but a piece of wood that was taped on little, you know, smaller pieces of wood to give some like portable elevation, you know, for the calf raise. And I would just bring that thing everywhere, just bust out calf raises in the library, bust out calf raises, you know, when people weren't looking. So that's pretty intense. And I would say that those things served me really well professionally. But two asterisks, and this is where it's hard to have some like revisionist history on this. Mm-hmm. Two things was that it definitely had long-term consequences. Like, I'm pretty sure that I started losing my hair early because of that level of intensity. My teeth, I grind through like all of my, I've been a serial teeth grinder since I was 10. So I have no enamels left on my teeth. I was maybe an alcoholic, borderline alcoholic. I don't know the exact definition, but I coped a lot with substances. Mm-hmm. And my motivation for all of those things always was from a place of I'm not good enough. So it was just this starting deficit. Like, I am not a good enough person, which I think I couldn't say it with words, but I think I can say it now as an adult, as an older adult, a middle-aged adult. I'm 45, turning 45 this year, is I just didn't think I was worthy of love. Mm. And I don't know where that came from, because I have very loving parents. I have a great group of friends. I have an amazing wife, two amazing kids, but I think I had this fundamental belief that I wasn't worthy of love. And so I had to go out. Love was earned. And the way I earned love was by showing people that I was very capable of doing stuff.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's it's interesting because just this, like, doing research for this episode, I went to, I tweeted it, so it's like not a big secret. Like, I went to Alex Hormozy's Twitter. And like, one of the things he said was like, you don't need a therapist. You need to stop thinking normal life is a problem. And I'm like, what a toxic, this is like a, like, and I have like 20, let's say 25 year old me, I'm 38 now, would have been like, men don't need therapy. Like, we just muscle. But like, that's such like a narrow, like, toxic worldview. And like, I'm in therapy now and it's been like amazing. And like, even on weeks where I don't have a lot, I feel like I don't have a lot to talk about. Like, it's just kind of good to get like an outside point of view. And so, first of all, I like what you say, like, I pass no judgment. I think this is like one of those things that's lost on social media advice, which is like, that's like kind of framing this whole conversation, right? Because like, people say things on social media to get engagement, and but it's always very judgy, right? It's like you're, I saw a tweet that was like, if you're employed by somebody, like, you have no freedom. And I'm like, that, what a wild thing to say. Like, so I really appreciate you sharing that. And like, you know, I kind of agree wholeheartedly. Like, when I was, before I met my wife, really, I was very much like, I don't care if I'm married, if I have kids, as long as I'm like rich or successful, like whatever I thought like success was. I also started making websites in high school. Nice. Like, very, very similar path. I also sold mix CDs. Like, I had I had like a dedicated DSL line at home because my dad worked for the phone company. And so like, I would use Napster and download songs overnight and burn the CDs. Yeah, it was really good. I've kind of felt the same way. Like, the more money I make, the more successful. And then like, the more, and not like people will like me. Like, I don't think it was that, but it's like, money will solve my problems. And then I kind of saw like working for a web development agency where like I had to work weekends or like I had to skip a concert to work late for them. Then I'm like, this is not the life I want to live. Mm-hmm. So
what concert?
It was, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, but it was Louis C.K. before before we found out about Louis C.K.
Yeah.
and so, it was like, I skipped that and I was so mad. And like, I'm like, this is not how I want to work. Like, my girlfriend just drove like an hour to be with me, and now I can't spend time with her because some guy decided that we had an emergency.
Yeah.
And I hated that. And I guess on that topic, right, we kind of see like the celebration of creators making a lot of money, right? And it makes sense, right? I'm not like poo-pooing anybody. Like I got the ConvertKit email today that was like, Ali Abdaal made $5 million in 2 years or whatever. But I feel like it almost fetish.
First of all, though, all those numbers are always revenue numbers. They never say profit numbers.
I love that you say that, right? Because like, I can, like, if I'm spending $1,000,001 to make $1,000,000, I'm not making any money, right? Like,
exactly. Yeah. You're not making $1,000,000.
Yeah. I love that. And so I'm really
Can I just interject here?
Yes.
Because Tiago Forte, who's another creator, Forte Labs, building a second brain.
Second brain, yeah.
He tweeted something. We can try to find it for the show notes. But he basically said, I think he said something along the lines, like, over the past decade, my business has made $10 million in revenue. He's like, most of it has been in the last 3 or 4 years. So keep that in mind. But if you smooth it out, it comes out in, I forget what he said. Then he gave the profit number. I forget what the profit number was. But basically what he and his wife, because they're partners, they take home over a 10-year period, they've taken home $350,000 a year of profit, which is really good.
Yeah.
But he said in the tweet, he's like, that's basically what you get paid as an average Google product manager.
Yeah.
And then he did the thing with taxes and all that. I forget the exact numbers, but basically he said, once we pay for childcare, we pay for our mortgage, we put away money for retirement, we basically have nothing left to save. And look, he lives in LA, so it's a Long Beach, high cost of living city. Everyone in the comments like, move to Texas.
Yeah.
But you could see the headline number was $10 million. Okay, $10 million over 10 years, right? So $1 million a year.
Right.
The bottom line number was $350,000 for two people, right? Husband and wife team. So $175,000 per person. Pre-tax, take into tax, two people working, you need childcare, take out childcare. You basically are covering your mortgage and your retirement saving and nothing else. And like, and he said, he's like, I travel nice.
Right.
So you go from $10 million to I travel nice. And by nice, I think he means like nice Airbnbs and nice. Coach, not like, not private jet nice or not
right. Yeah.
Premium, not even first class nice.
Yeah. Was it you who tweeted about first, like flying first class on a long flight?
Probably. My wife and I fight a lot about this. There's a bit of a fundamental disconnect. I'm a child of first generation immigrants,
mm-hmm.
and so I have trouble enjoying the money that I earn. Mm-hmm. I feel a lot of guilt. I hear my mom and dad's voice being like, "That's a 4-hour flight. Why would you send? You know, why would you pay triple?" But in certain cases, I can afford it, and so I struggle with that tension, and so I tend to not do it. Look, I treat myself nice. Surfboards, cameras, like, it's funny. Someone asked me, what's the most expensive thing you've bought? I was like, well, my wife's engagement ring, my car, I rent my house. And then after that, all I could think of was MacBook, like the nicest MacBook Pros. I always get like a $3,000 MacBook Pro every 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm on my computer every minute of the day.
Yeah.
Better make it nice.
Absolutely. I just bought the souped up MacBook Air M3, right?
Nice. Yeah, I got the M3 Pro. It's freaking dope.
So psyched. Yeah. And like, that's like I've got like a Mac Studio. That's like my main machine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I'm going to have that thing for 4 years. I'm going to use it every single day. Like, it should have 24 gigs of RAM or whatever.
Exactly.
I love that. So we've like really touched on this, but like it really feels like we fetishize the top level, let's be rich revenue number, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You walked away from a 7-figure salary, I think, from when you worked on Wall Street. How do you redefine success for yourself, right? Like, 'cause I think people would be like, that's insane. Like, how could you do that?
Yeah, I want to say that I feel very lucky in the situations that were presented to me. So, for example, my parents put me through college without any student loans. So I kind of, at 21 years old, even though I had money, you know, I was making those websites. I think I probably entered college with 20 grand of savings from my web design practice. Nice. But my parents were like, nope, that's your money. You know, our parental responsibility, we pay for college and then you go on for your life. So I feel very blessed there. I know that's an advantage that not a lot of people can start with, say they started with. And then I went, and then I worked on Wall Street, which is just this crazy outlier industry where if you, and look, we can talk about the trade-offs, but if you're an average person at a major Wall Street firm, at 30, you're making 700 grand.
Wow.
Average.
Wow.
And the outliers are making like 2 million.
Yeah.
So so imagine that's at 30. So imagine at 50, right? The outlier is making 5 million a year. The average person's making 1.7 or something. So it's just now you got to keep in mind that you live in New York, where a studio apartment would cost you about $800,000 to buy like a 500 square foot apartment.
Right.
So New York's just a freaking expensive place. So anyway, I say that because I think that my creator journey is unique. And the reason why I say is I had 3, 4, 5 really good years on Wall Street. And I invested all that money. And then if I just grow that money, 5-6% S&P 500, my family is good for the rest of our lives. My retirement's good. My kids' college is good. Whatever we need, you know, I wouldn't even say modest, but like living an upper class lifestyle is taken care of there. And then all I need my creator business to do is to basically cover my living expenses. So it's not about, you know, if you contrast with what Tiago said in his tweet, he needs his creator business to build him wealth.
Right.
Because he didn't have, this is my second career. And I'm really lucky that my first career was way more lucrative than my second career. So I say that just to put context on the question that you had asked, which is like, what's it like taking a huge pay cut?
Yeah. I'll also just say like, I mean, you were also like, I made a bunch of money in high school too. And I like squandered it because I was an idiot. Mm. Like, because I'm like a white guy, right? I didn't like think about any of that. I will say my grandfather came over from Italy in 1949 and he like lived like the immigrant lifestyle in New York, saved every penny. And thanks to, you know, my inheritance from him, I also have no student loan debt. Yeah. Like I was able to pay that off thanks to what he left me and my three younger brothers. I'd
love
very,
to do that for my grandkids.
I know, right? Like same, right? Like my wife's like, should we start like a 529 or whatever? And I'm like, I'm like, I don't know. Like college, who knows what college is going to be in 18 years? But we did start an interest yielding savings fund. But you're also smart with your money, right? Like, which I think a lot of young people, like when I got my first job out of college at the University of Scranton, I was asking about my retirement fund, my investment fund. And like the HR person was very impressed that somebody my age was asking about that. And I'm like, we should all think about that. Like, I feel like, so, I mean, it is unique, certainly. I won't take that. But, you know, I think that we can make good decisions no matter where we are in life too.
Yeah. No, and again, I feel blessed. I think part of it is I'm an extremely curious person.
Yeah.
Doesn't leave any stone unturned. Part of it is that I'm intense about things, but I'm also, as I've gotten older, I know when to dial back my intensity and when to dial it up, right?
Yeah.
And I think when I was younger, it was a 10 out of 10
all the time,
which is why I needed to drink so much and which is why, you know, I was coping in other ways. And now I feel way more balanced of that. And again, I think it just goes back to the seasons thing that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, something my therapist told me about like just yesterday, actually, because like I was telling her how I like, I was always like mouthy in real life and on the internet. And I'm like a lot less like that now. And there was an incident where, you know, I got like kind of a weird threat from like someone online. And I was really worried. I'm like, I've got kids to think about now. And I was like, that's so different from the way I was when I was like 26 and not attached. And I was like, I didn't not care about my personal safety, but I was willing to put that at risk way more easily. And she was like, yeah, well, as you get older, like you've got a prefrontal cortex that develops better and you are better at regulating stuff like that too. So it really is interesting when you think about stuff like that. So let's do this. How do you how did you redefine success for yourself as you got older?
Yeah. It's not easy, right? I ask this question often to the people who I coach and teach. I think that, I have a deep, deep meditation practice. So I've been meditating 40 to 60 minutes a day for a decade now. And so to me, a lot of what I want in life is to be present. And so, I have a saying that I tell myself is when I'm with you, I'm with you. And it doesn't matter if it's a podcast interview, my wife, my kids, my employees, my coaching clients, I'm just fully present. There's a spiritual teacher, Tara Brach, B-R-A-C-H. She says, love is the fullness of presence. And so I feel like for me, success is just being present. Now, I can give you more, a little bit more, put more meat on that bone, for example. So I actually think I've written out kind of my success statement. And so one is the ability to express myself creatively every day. And that's obviously writing, podcasting on the internet, but also in how I dress and cooking. And, I think creative expression is just one of the most beautiful traits of humanity. And so I try to build my life around creative expression. I love being outdoors. I live in LA. It's 68 degrees, zero humidity, no clouds in the sky, 360 days a year. And so I surf, I run, I go for beach walks, I play pickleball, play basketball with my kids. I'm outdoors. And so for me, success is just moving my body outdoors a lot. I'm outdoors 2 to 4 hours a day.
Nice.
And again, that's just the weather is so dang good here.
I'm on the East Coast where it was 50 degrees yesterday and we were like, yes, it's warm.
Losing your minds, yeah. Well, I grew up in New York City, so I know that. So moving my body. Then the other is just being around people who are good energy. Being around good energy, giving out good energy, being around good energy. So I kind of have a no a-hole policy. If someone, on Twitter, I'll block them. I won't engage, I'll block them. If there's a client who I can tell, a prospect that I could see might have some pushy, vibes, I'll just say no. I'll respectfully say no. People I engage with on the internet, just people in my life are positive energy. And so being around good vibes. I want time freedom, right? So I work a lot, but I want to work when I want to work. And I want to be, my daughter, I volunteer at the school every week.
Nice.
At a science lab or nice. Lunch. So noon every once a week, I volunteer in one of my daughter's classes. And so I just want, it's just all I ask for is the hour, but I want to know that, if the hour slot is on a Thursday, I can go on a Thursday. If the hour slot is on a Tuesday afternoon, I can go on a Tuesday afternoon. So time freedom. And then a subset of the being outdoors is I want to surf every day. So I live walking distance to the beach. So I basically try to surf every day.
That's amazing. And that's so it's important. You understand yourself and you know that
the crazy freedom. Thing too,
yeah.
is that very few of those things require a lot of money.
Right. Yeah.
That's the thing about time freedom, which I interrupted you were going to ask a question about it, but oftentimes people want money to buy back time, right? So you might work really hard and then you will order DoorDash, right? So you save an hour of cooking or you have a cleaning person, you save an hour of cleaning, or you have your trainer come to you, you save an hour of commuting, right? that's cool. But then you could also invert that where you're like, well, I actually have more free time. And so I make less money, but I can just drive to my gym instead of having a trainer come to me. And the effect is the same. It takes me more time, but that's okay because I have plenty of time and I'm not constrained by like needing to work, needing to make more money. So I've really, really worked hard to design my life that way. And I tell people, like part of this is because I had that first career where I had built that nest egg that can grow over multiple decades in the S&P 500, nothing fancy. But if someone was like, hey, Kay, someone said to me, hey, Kay, I'm going to pay you $10,000 to do five, $10,000 a week to do 5 hours of data entry. I'd be like, I think I'm going to say no, because I would take that $10,000 and then try to turn it into more free time.
Right.
Instead, why don't I just keep the 5 hours and not just engage in that trade? Now, again, I'm in a position where I don't, you know, most people would probably take that. That money could really move the needle for them. And so again, no judgment, but that's why I try to point out my financial situation in advance, because I'm not a typical creator in that, like, I'm just trying to run this as a break-even lifestyle business, whereas most people are trying to do this to grow their nest egg.
Yeah, I think your relationship with time and money is good, though. Like, what you said here reminded me of two other interviews I did, one with my friend Nev Harris, who said, like, the best way you can earn more money in your business is by, like, cutting expenses you don't need, right? That's, like, the fastest way to do it. And like the same thing, like when I saw how much money we were spending with DoorDash, I almost died. Like I couldn't even believe it. And I'm like,
DoorDash is crazy.
Yeah. Like I'll just drive to the pizza shop or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'll drive to get the Chinese. Like that's fine. Plus, like, I mean, three small kids, like a 5 minute drive is quiet. It's like good quiet time, right? And then the other one is a more recent one with Maggie Patterson, where like, there's this notion that certain things mean you're not trading time for money, or you're not trading hours for dollars or whatever, right? In work. And she's like, you're always trading hours for dollars in work. Like it doesn't, it's just like with a membership, maybe you're trading for fewer dollars, right? Versus like coaching. And so I like this relationship, and we'll talk more about this in a little bit, but I recently made the decision, and I talk about it on a recent episode, where I'm not going to do LinkedIn Learning courses anymore, even though it, like, based on the hourly rate I want, like, it totally works out. It's not the kind of work that I feel is high leverage for me.
Yeah.
And so I can take that time and use it elsewhere, or, you know, knock off early and go see my kids play, or like go to my kids' like Christmas parade or whatever. Right. And so, I think that's really important. I want to get into, like, do we need to hustle? But first, let's take a quick break for our sponsors.
Look, when you have an online-based business, speed and reliability are the most important aspects of a service. Not far behind that is actually owning the website that your business relies on. When you own your website, you're not subject to an algorithm, changing terms, or accidental shutdowns. That's why I'm so excited that Liquid Web is back as a sponsor of How I Built It this year. Their Cloud VPS is some of the best in-class hosting you can get when your business relies on your website. From speed to security and protection to regular backups, with Liquid Web, you can trust your website will remain in tip-top shape. Not technically savvy? Don't worry. Liquid Web offers fully managed hosting, which means they have a team of knowledgeable experts looking after your website for you, so you can focus on running your business. If you need fast, reliable, and secure hosting for your business, check out Liquid Web. Head over to howibuilt.it/liquidweb today. This episode is brought to you by porkbun.com. Look, I've been buying domains for 24 years. And for a long time, that meant a convoluted experience with upsells and exploding prices. But Porkbun is refreshingly different. They've got everything from .com domains to unique ones like .pro, .dev, and .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies like Whois Privacy and SSL certificates. Plus, they have AI-generated search results to help find the best available domain name for you. All of these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support 365 days a year and tons of 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers. Sound good? Go to howibuilt.it/porkbun to get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around. Again, that's howibuilt.it/porkbun. Thanks so much to Porkbun for supporting How I Built It. Hey, real quick before we get back into the episode, I want to tell you about my free newsletter, Podcast Workflows. If you are wondering how I can successfully run this show, plus two other shows, plus run a business, plus run three children, Podcast Workflows is for you. You will get weekly emails with behind-the-scenes look on how I produce this show, experiments I am trying with other podcasts, and general advice to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. You'll also have the opportunity to become a member and get ad-free extended episodes of this show as well as bonus content. You can do all of that over at podcastworkflows.com/join. That's podcastworkflows.com/join. Sign up for free today. And we're back. So let's get into like the big question, right? Don't we need to hustle to grow our business? Like, I know Justin Moore asked Dickie Bush this in your debate, which I'll link to the show notes. We've referenced that a few times. You can find them at howibuilt.it/410. That's 410. And I like how you called hustle culture escapism. But we didn't really get your answer to that question, right? Justin went into like designing your life intentionally. So don't we need to hustle to grow our business a little bit?
I think you got to start with the end in mind, right? And so what's the end goal, right? And so the end goal, so why, I mean, I can start with myself. I think I've shared this a few times. I started a business to enable a certain lifestyle, right? So if I hustle, does the hustle bring me closer to that lifestyle? Well, one of the things that I said is that I really want to be present. And so to me, hustle and presence might be at odds, mm-hmm. right? Definitely like beating up my body for work is at odds with being a 44-year-old guy who, you know, is starting to feel the effects of aging and so on. And so I think that it all depends. So I'll give you another example is I was one of the fastest promoted folks at the entire company, at BlackRock, the company that I worked at. So I was a managing director at 31 years old. I was one of the youngest ever. That's kind of a made man in the company. There's probably 500 in a company of 100,000.
Wow.
Right? It's kind of like becoming a junior partner. Would be an equivalent. But you're a made man and it's a very known thing. So I hustled, you could make the argument that I hustled for, you know, so 21, I entered the workforce. I hustled for 10 years to get that, right? And you could make the argument that a lot of the reason why I don't need to worry about building wealth at this phase of my life is because of the hustling that I did from age 21 to 31, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not against hustle. I think that there's a time and place for hustle. Usually it's when you have more energy and less commitments. So basically when you're single.
Yeah.
Or without kids. Now, I think the asterisk that I want to put on hustle is it's start with the end in mind. Right? For me, I think I've always had these plans. Like I told my mom when I was a kid, I was like, I want to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30. And so that was the end, right?
We are so the same. I said the same exact thing. Like,
totally. I think it's a pretty common thing to say as a kid.
Yeah.
And I achieved it. And so, you know, that was the end. And then look, here's where things get dicey is like, sometimes you hustle towards an end. And then when you get the end, you realize that the end, like, let's say you, like, I want to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30. You become a millionaire at 30. Then you're like, well, I want to have 5 million bucks by the time I'm 40, right? The goalposts are moving, the hedonic treadmill. So then what was a 10-year window of hustle somehow turns into a 20-year window of hustle with a very different, you know, 20 to 30, no kids, you know, maybe you're dating your spouse. 30 to 40, probably got some kids in that window if that's on your trajectory.
Right.
Right. 40 to 50, start losing friends, start losing parents. And so what I have seen is that someone says, I'm going to hustle for this goal, which is a very, I'm fully supportive of that. I've done that many times.
Yeah.
But what happens is when they hit the goalposts move, and then they continue to hustle. And then the hustle becomes the water that they swim in, the oxygen that they breathe. It's almost like they don't know an existence without hustle because it becomes the baseline. And so then you get into this very strange relationship that, you know, when you just said you wanted to be a millionaire at 30, now you want to have $10 million at 50, and you've just committed 30 years of your life to some goal that you may not actually truly care about.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it gets dangerous. I'll give you another example of when I like to use a parable for this example. Some people hustle because they're competitive. They want to win. So this is a story about two merchants competing at a market. And an angel comes down to one of the merchants and says, I can make any dream of yours come true. And the merchant says, great. He's really competitive. And the angel said, there's just one catch. Whatever I do for you, your competitor gets double. So if you want one bar of gold, your competitor gets two bars of gold. If you want to live to be 100, your competitor gets to live to be 200. If you want 10 spouses, your competitor gets 20 spouses. It's like old ages, you know, polyamory and so on. And the person who's so competitive, the merchant, he thinks deeply. He goes, make me blind in one eye.
Wow.
A lot of people do that. The person that's chasing the goal that's not really even theirs for 30 years, beating up their health, sabotaging their relationships, being an absentee parent, they're poking themselves in their eye, hoping, you know, to beat the other person.
Yeah. Wow. That story gave me chills. I was like, you're like, how's this going to end? Like, what's he going to do? Like, want nothing and then the guy gets double nothing? Nope. Even worse. That's worse. And it's interesting, right? Because like, okay, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in May 2021.
Oh, yeah.
And I like, it ran in my family. Like even my dog had it. Like I knew it was coming.
We're similar.
Oh.
I was on the cusp and miraculously veered off.
Yeah. That's like,
We can talk about it offline or whatever.
Yeah, but I know. But like, I mean, like the pandemic is what did me in. Cause like, I just like stopped kind of like, I like ate ice cream every night. But like after that, I like went like full no carbs for like 6 months. I got my A1C down to like 5.2, which for
we're twins.
Yeah,
I was 5.7, and I got mine down to 5.2.
That's
no
awesome.
Carbs, no carbs, no sugar for a year.
Yeah. So like so my A1C at diagnosis was 11. It's real. That's real bad, my friend. You gotta like below 6 is what you want. And so, but like
11 to 5.2, that's insane.
It's wild. And like, I felt better. Like I wasn't falling asleep at my desk. I had more energy. And I'm like, is this what it feels like to eat healthy or like to feel good? Like, and not like you just got shot with a tranquilizer dart. And like, honestly, like I had I did Whole30 in my 20s, right? And then like, I had kids and I was working from home more and I was just like, oh, I guess this is just like what getting older and being sleep deprived because of kids is. Mm-hmm. But then like I eat and like now I also have sleep apnea. And so like I got a CPAP and like the life I'm living now is a life that was unimaginable before that because I knew nothing else, which is wild.
Yeah. And it shows that, you know, there are, first of all, kudos to you for getting it down that way, because I know the sacrifices that have to be made to move the needle. I went from 5.7 to 5.2. And that was a year's worth of sacrifice.
Yeah.
Most people I talk to, they're like, there's no way. I would never, I would just give me a medicine or something. I just wouldn't try.
Well, that's like, I have metformin, but like, I'm like, I'm not going on insulin. Like, and I have kids, like I'm not losing a foot. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So.
And I think that's it. Like, that's one of the interesting things about time freedom, right? It's like, you don't have time freedom, so you have to snack or you're always stressed, you're stress eating. And that's the whole thing, the data entry example that I give you, where it's like, oh, I'll give you $10,000 if you do 5 hours of data entry. This is like, I'll give you type two diabetes if you work your ass off for 5 years.
Right, right.
And then you'll make all this money. And then it's like, well, actually, I'd rather not have the type two diabetes. I'd rather make less money. And so, you know, I think that's where the goalposts moving and hustle culture kind of making you blind. And I think there's another thing about hustle culture. This is changing now, but let's just say like untethered or unhinged ambition. Maybe that's a nicer way of saying hustle culture.
Yeah.
I think untethered ambition is really celebrated in Western society. So like, you know, you talk about the Elons or the Bezoses or the hedge fund managers that, you know, they're notorious on how much they work. And people are like, wow, can you believe he's 60 and he still pulls all-nighters? And look, that, again, I make no judgment to anyone's decisions. People would look at a lot of my decisions and judge me for them. So look, I just own my decisions. Mm-hmm. But you could see how when you celebrate, less about the hustle culture, I think it's a little bit more subtle. It's you glorify these entrepreneurs and these, you know, Mr. Beast, like, you know, Mr. Beast giving his talks of, you know, how he skipped high school and they would watch YouTube videos and critique them on a Skype thread call for like 18 hours a day while he was in high school. I'm like, great. I have no judgment on that. Not for me.
Right. Right.
And your level of success makes tremendous. If you're willing to watch 18 hours of YouTube videos and analyze them with your friends on Skype as a high school dropout, you deserve to be the biggest YouTuber in the world.
Right. Right. And like, I mean,
I don't want that.
But even like coming back around to that, like he recently talked about how he's been doing fewer videos and they've been more story driven. And like, it's a better quality over just like pumping out a bunch of videos where he's yelling at a camera. Like,
And seasons, right?
I was just going to say, it's like, it's a season, right?
One day Mr. Beast will have kids and he's going to be like, he gave this story once where he basically cannot be anywhere in public because someone will spot him, will send out Instagram story, Snapchat or a tweet. And within 15 minutes, there's like 5,000 people around him.
Wow. That would stress me out.
So imagine that. Like, that's stressful enough when you're a single dude.
Right.
Imagine you have a newborn.
Yeah.
Like, you have to live in a gated compound.
Right.
And that's not, like, what kind of way? I mean, again, everyone makes their own decisions.
Right.
But that's, like, I think people look at someone like him, like, I want his life. And I'm like, do you realize that you can never be in public probably for the rest of your life?
Right.
You're like a president.
Right.
Like you need armed security around you for the rest of your life.
And yeah.
Some people will be like, that's a trade-off I'd make to know that my videos are being watched by billions of people. And other people are like, NFW.
Yeah. 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 I really, it's like, you know, the grass is greener syndrome, right? Like they see the good, they don't see the bad. I know we're coming up on time here. I love that you said untethered ambition. If you want to hear more of Kay talking about that with Amanda Goetz, I will link to his interview with her in the show notes. I keep wanting to call your podcast Rad Reads, but that's like your company. And I know that's not the case. So can you just say the name of your podcast for people?
The Examined Life Podcast.
The Examined Life Podcast. This is like, I did a bunch of research and I didn't write that down. But I'd like to kind of wrap up here with, you know, we kind of talked about redefining success. I like to give people actionable advice on the show. Most of the people who listen are busy solopreneurs. They're probably parents, though I've always been worried to say that, like I'm hedging in the niche area there. But I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about $10,000 work, right? I saw you speak at Craft and Commerce a couple of years ago, and you really, like, I loved your framing on this. So can you talk about that, how crucial that has been to, we didn't say work-life balance, but, you know, about living the life that you see as successful, yeah. Let's say.
Yeah. And so we could link to the manifesto in the show notes. But basically, it's a quadrant that has four levels of work, $10, $100, $1,000, and $10,000 work. And basically, there's skill, low skill, high skill, low leverage, high leverage. And obviously, the low skill, low leverage is $10 work. That's, you know, color coding your calendar or downloading your Kindle highlights into, you know, Zapier. And then the $100 work is kind of, you're kind of doing something more productive, but still the wrong thing, like a text expander or, you know, a Zapier automation and so on. $1,000 work is that's, and it's not the actual value. It's just think about the multipliers.
Right.
$1,000 work is the thing you're paid to do. So if you're a podcaster, it's having podcast interviews. If you're a writer, it's writing. If you're a software engineer, it's writing code. If you're an investment banker, it's doing spreadsheets, making deals. Then the 10K work is this thing that's like force multiplier, right? And so this is going to sound a little bit meta, but this matrix is such a powerful force multiplier. It's just a 2x2 matrix that people in companies, they're like, oh, what's your $10 work today? What's your 10K work? It's become memeified of sorts in kind of the knowledge worker community. And if people just peel a little bit back the onion, peel the onion, they see K. They see my blog. They sign up to my newsletter. And so if you think about the leverage, I've given that talk that you saw at ConvertKit, I've given it 100 times in my life, 150 times. Same talk. It's dialed in. It's a good talk. And I can just go in, drop it, and then whatever, you know, back in the day, we had a course that we sold off of the back of that. And so it was just like the marketing was marketing without it even, because people were writing blog posts about it. And so they were marketing my idea. It's not trademarked or patented. And then indirectly, they were leading to the things that, you know, the CTAs that we wanted them to lead to. So I'm always trying to think about that leverage. In fact, today at 1 o'clock Pacific, I have a call with a reporter at a major publication for the next kind of thing that I'm trying to memeify, which I call the post-achievement professionals, which is what we've been talking about often, is these people that enter this new season of life and a lot of the tools from the prior season, not only are they not serving them anymore, but they're actually hurting them. Like right. That. And we talk about this, like,
I have that post up in my browser right now.
Yeah. So again, that idea is earlier, but I started talking about it with people and they just heard the name. They're like, whoa, say more. What's that thing you just said? What'd you just say? And the marketer in me, I'm an entrepreneur, but I have a decent marketing brain. The marketer is like, when you see that light bulb moment in people's eyes, you lean into that. You find out what's going on in their heads when they heard that term. And so I just started playing with that term, post-achievement professional, made a few videos about it, made a podcast episode. We can link to it, wrote the manifesto. You know, if you search post-achievement professional, my things all come up first. It's not a competitive search term, but people are searching for it, I know. And then lo and behold, a reporter at a major, major publication. We're talking like top three, like New York Times type caliber. Cold email is like, hey, I stumbled on your idea of post-achievement professional. I'm writing an article that references that idea. Boom.
I love that.
And so think about the leverage there. It's like I said, it's not the New York Times, but imagine it was the New York Times. There's an article and it's like, hey, he who writes about post-achievement professionals who happens to be an executive coach, the eyeballs that that thing's going to see is insane. And so the leverage on that. So I think a lot about, and they're not just with marketing. I think a lot about another example I'll give you on the leverage is that I have a chief of staff / product manager, but we record a podcast and then we have one person who's trained just to look for clips. Mm. We have another person who's trained to edit, who's a clips editor. And then we have a third person that's a social media manager, and they're all contractors. So I record a podcast and then four clips, but not just like bad, like four really good clips, because one person's trained just to find. We have a person trained just to find clips.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that little machine, and all I do is I record my podcast for 55 minutes, an hour, and then boom, it's on TikTok, it's on every single channel, it's in the newsletter, and so on. And because it's with contractors, it's not particularly expensive. But we had to set up the machine.
Yeah.
And so setting up the machine was the 10K work.
Love that. And I love that you ended with that example, right? Because I think I have like the opposite for me. Like I was in the Atlantic recently because like I like tweeted about how upset I was about the wire cutter, like the quality going down.
Oh, yeah.
And they wanted to talk about that. And I'm like, man, imagine if like they wanted to talk about like podcast automation, mm-hmm. which is like the actual work I do. So mm-hmm. I love that. The 10K, if we would like to turn this into a thesis statement, would you say like the 10K work enables you to do your 1K work more efficiently or?
Exactly. It allows you to basically do the thing that you're skilled at without you doing it.
Love it. Love it. I love that. Kay, this has been great. If people want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
Thank you so much, Joe. You ask amazing questions. Thank you to all the listeners. Y'all are awesome, man. Radreads.co. Definitely sign up for my newsletter. I write twice a week. I've been writing a weekly. One of those is a 500 to 800 word essay I've written for 250 consecutive weeks. So nice. I like to write. Examine Life podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube. And I'm most active on Twitter. It's my full name. We'll put it in the show notes. But if you just do Twitter, K-H-E, which is my nickname, it will land on me.
Awesome. I love that. I will link to all of that in the show notes over at howibuilt.it/410. If you want to get ad-free extended episodes, you can, again, join the membership over at howibuilt.it/410. Or if you're listening to Apple Podcasts, you can just hit that subscribe button. We're going to do a speed round where I'm going to ask Kay about the effective use of stories. So thank you so much for listening. Thanks to our sponsors. And until next time, get out there and build something.